The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis, with your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro. This program will catapult your awareness in the mastery of power, influence, and persuasion. Journey to the uncharted conversations of human interactions and discover your winning capital. Now, from the boardroom to the bedroom with Suzanne Z. Pedro.
Hi, my lovely audience. I want y'all to close your eyes right now. And I'm going to say a couple of words and visualize. When I say the word like gangster, gringo, Uncle Tom, or even cracker, even though those aren't politically correct, what comes to your mind? So today, we're going to be talking about not your stereotypical episode, but my guest, Dr. Steven Stressner, who has research focuses on cognitive and the motivational factors in stereotyping. And you might say, okay, oh, like, how boring is that? But no, do you realize what we're doing in our world right now? I mean, at Al, the airline for Israel, they've been doing behavioral stereotyping. And now, I mean, you can't even judge who is who's your enemy or not. So I'd love my guests to be able to, you know, unravel all this mysteries. So I welcome Dr. Steven Stressner. Hi, Dr. Stressner.
Hi there. How are you? It's really a pleasure to be on your program today.
Now, I am so honored. Thank you. So, what is a stereotypical threat? I mean,
well, yeah, I think before we get into sort of different variants of sort of implications of stereotypes, it's helpful to just define a few terms.
Sure.
Because it turns out we have stereotypes about stereotypes, and we have stereotypes about stereotyping. So, what is a stereotype? Well, from a sort of a cognitive science point of view, from a sort of empirical point of view, a stereotype is any belief that we have about a social group. And so when we think about stereotypes, we often think about the ones that are extreme, the ones that are particularly negative, maybe the stereotypes that we are confronted with in our lives, or maybe the stereotypes we want to avoid having. But stereotypes, in my view, are much more fundamental and broad than those beliefs. They are beliefs about anybody based on the social groups to which they belong. So they involve things like gender. They involve beliefs about people based on ethnicity or nationality, or even based on beliefs that we have about people based on their physical attractiveness or their body type. So when you start thinking about stereotypes as being beliefs about membership in a social group, you realize that almost all of our thinking about people is influenced by and constrained by stereotypes, that they aren't just things that we use rarely or from time to time, but in fact they affect almost all of the thoughts that we have about people that we encounter or learn about.
So how do we begin? I mean, at what age do we start developing? I mean, we're not born, you know, with a bias or prejudice.
Well, that's an interesting question. There is some evidence from very early on that that we do actually have some bias. Now, it's bias that usually helps us survive. So, for example, infants are exposed to their mother's voice more than other people's voice when they're inside the womb, and they show a immediate recognition and preference for their mother's voice over strangers' voices. Now, that's a bias. They will attend to the mother's voice. They will show pleasure in responding to a mother's voice compared with a stranger. So that's a bias. It is a tendency to prefer something that's familiar versus something that's unfamiliar. So the foundations of all of these other things that come along later in life when we develop all sorts of negative or extreme beliefs about groups are sort of fundamental to the way we function as people. And that's sort of built into our cognitive systems, and it emerges over time, of course, as people develop, as they age, as they have experiences. But the basic ability to divide the world into people like me, people who are friends, people that have characteristics that are similar to me, versus people who are not friends, people who are different from me, that seems to be built into the way we think about the world.
So is that more of a cultural thing? Like, you know, like I think of people up in Alaska, for example, or whatever, you know, or the villages of India. I mean, they don't have that outside influence, I would say. So they like, you know, like in a bubble.
Yeah, well, you know, each bubble will have its own things that people pay attention to and things that are important. So, you know, if you're somewhat segregated from mainstream media, you might not have beliefs about certain ethnic groups because you might not know anything about them. But on the other hand, you might have very strong beliefs about people from a community nearby, or perhaps people who are older than you or younger than you. So we all have ways of dividing up our social worlds in our heads. The particular things that we notice and pay attention to in dividing up our social world might very much correspond to our experiences and what we're exposed to. But again, the ability to sort of take a complex social world where, you know, you're encountering many, many people, we have to simplify that. And we do so by dividing the world into people like me, people different from me, people who have traits and characteristics that I like versus those who I have characteristics that I don't like. And we use knowledge about social group memberships in order to decide what some of these traits are, even though those beliefs might be inaccurate themselves.
Okay, doctor, what do you think about multiculturalism? Because everybody has their own melting pot. And when you take their heritage and you try to melt it into one great big melting pot, it just, how does multiculturalism work in that effect?
Yeah, there's some very interesting research that's been emerging in the last several years about multiculturalism. And what seems to be very important is about how multiculturalism is framed or described, how it's okay. Set up. What people often desire is to live in a world that's colorblind, where we don't notice difference. And I think the problem with that, and that the research is suggestive that this is a problem, is that when you frame things in a colorblind perspective, that people don't then attempt to form any beliefs about what groups are like. They're not particularly empathetic to different experiences that different groups have. It's a way of sticking your head in the social sand and pretending that people's social realities, that people don't have different social realities. And it also tends to lock in built-in biases that are structural or institutional. If you try to be colorblind or try not to pay attention to issues of gender, for example, then you might not be sensitive to the fact that in the real world, women aren't being compensated at the same level as men. So what seems to be effective isn't to be colorblind, but to in fact talk about the positive aspects of diversity, how, for example, different people bring different strengths to a position, or we can appreciate different attributes that people have, different backgrounds, and that multiculturalism and diversity can be seen as a source of strength. That seems very helpful, and it allows you to recognize the different experiences of groups, yet at the same time, it doesn't lock you into thinking negatively about other people. It focuses on positive contributions that are being made by members of different groups, even though those beliefs themselves might be somewhat stereotypical.
Okay, so when you put political correctness in context, that's like putting a band-aid over, how can I say it? You know, that whatever you believe, you can't speak.
Yeah.
It's like a straitjacket on your thorns about. And, I mean, how does that play into stereotypical when you're not able to articulate?
That's a very good question. People are naturally quite uncomfortable talking about issues of diversity and difference. And when we do talk about stereotyping, we often do focus on the most egregious forms of stereotyping. So those conversations can be difficult. And I've been teaching about the psychology of stereotyping and prejudice for a couple of decades now to college and university students. And one thing I find very effective is to talk about sort of the normality of thinking in terms of categories. Now, we often, you know, when we're talking about stereotyping, we're talking about social categories. But I think it's important to recognize that we think about categories in all domains of our lives. So let's take, for example, you go into a store and you're looking for some food and you're faced with all of these choices and options. Now, our perceptual systems sort of let us easily put these objects that we're seeing into different categories of food. So you might look at something and you say, well, that's an apple. Well, how did you do that? You did that by looking at the features of the apple, and you said, oh, yes, it's red, it's round, it has a stem, it's shiny, it's a particular size. And so we can quickly recognize that that's an apple. Uh-huh. What happens as a consequence of being able to identify that as an apple is that all your beliefs and memories and associations you have with apples and your expectations about that particular apple all come into mind. They flood into your mind. This happens without our intention, without our awareness. In fact, we probably can't look at an apple and not think about apples being crunchy and sweet and tasty. All those beliefs and experiences we have with that category naturally flood into our minds, and they're going to influence how we behave. We're going to pick it up. We're going to have a certain expectation of what the apple should feel like. We have a certain expectation of what it's going to taste like, and presumably we will use that information to make a purchasing decision.
Now, what happens before we go to break? We have like 1 minute.
Sure.
What happens when you say, like, we have this perception of an apple, and all of a sudden you might bite into it and it's like not what you perceived?
That's exactly what the point of this story was, that we have stereotypes about objects too. But we just call them beliefs. I think apples are like this. I think they're going to be sweet. Now, you might take this apple home and bite into it, and it's a mushy mess, and it tastes awful. Well, it turns out that your stereotype was not applicable to this apple. Your beliefs about what apples are like in general did not characterize this particular apple. Now, in that case, you can see the benefits of thinking in terms of categories, and you can also see the consequences, the negative consequences, of relying on categorical beliefs. The same is true about people, but it can also get us into social trouble, too.
Well, I was just going to say that. We have 30 seconds before break. When we come back, we'll talk about it. Because a woman sees a knight in shining armor. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got all the glitter, the facade. But guess what? Underneath, it's not going to work like that. So we'll be right back with Dr. Steven Strassner. Thank you.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you ever noticed that sometimes life just feels easier, especially when judgment of you or anyone else ceases to exist? What if you could function from that space all the time? What if gratitude is the key? Every time you are grateful for someone or something, a new universe opens up. What difference can you create in your life and the world from the energy, space, and consciousness of gratitude? Join us on Access Consciousness Presents Beyond Saying Thank You every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings of the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Dr. Steven Stressner. And if you weren't with us earlier, well, this is going to be a better portion of it because he's going to talk about stereotyping and stereotypical threat and what it can do to you is in business and personal life, because we all have prejudices and biases, and he's going to give the cognitive and the psychological background of, like, wow, why do we do this? And maybe next time you see somebody, you won't have that same reflection. Thank you. We're back with Dr. Steven.
Hi there.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so we were talking. I don't know. We did a lot of different in the first half. But, you know, stereotypical threat. I mean, I don't think we were able to define it. And, like, why is it important for people to be cognizant of it?
Okay, so stereotype threat is a phenomenon that's been very well investigated over the last 15 years or so. And it has to do with the fact that, unlike the apple, who has no thoughts about how it's being perceived, how it's being judged, one particularly problematic aspect of human stereotypes or beliefs about human groups is that we know that other people have them, and that they have them about groups that we belong to. And so when you're interacting with another person, we all find ourselves in some circumstances where we realize we're being seen through the lens of a stereotype. So it might be a woman in a job interview or in the workplace. It might be a man who's in a gender, counter-stereotypical role, a male nurse, for example. It could be a member of a group in a domain where a stereotype suggests that they don't do particularly well. Unfortunately, the stereotype that African-Americans struggle in school is in our culture. And so stereotype threat is the phenomenon where people realize that they're about to be judged through the lens of a stereotype. And it turns out, in many circumstances, when people realize that they're being judged stereotypically, it actually can serve to harm their performance in that domain. So, you know, why does that happen? You know, why do we end up sometimes fulfilling or confirming stereotypes that apply to the groups that we belong to? Well, it turns out that when we think we're being stereotyped, it creates a lot of consequences for how we function that don't tend to help performance. So, go ahead.
Okay, what just comes to mind is, like, diplomacy.
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, Aaron, you know, you walk in and you're supposed to be a diplomat. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. You're supposed to be a diplomat, but you walk in still ingrained with some bias and critical ideas, and that person would have to overcome it. And then how would that stereotypical threat, that Because they thinking on the opposite side of the table, they looking at you the same way.
Yeah.
So you have two people with two different cultures, two different ideas, two different backgrounds. Is there a possibility that they can overcome that?
That's a good question. And of course, it's part of the reason that things like international relations are so fraught with misunderstanding, because you each have stereotypes of one another, and you have beliefs about what they think about you. And so all of this is being thought about at the same time you're trying to communicate. You're trying to get something done. You're trying to make progress on some joint venture, or you're trying to resolve some conflict. So the fact that all these beliefs are in your same mental space as trying to, you know, address the issue at hand does tend to complicate things. And, you know, stereotype threat is when you believe somebody has a negative belief about you within a particular domain. So, so on top of trying to, like, focus on the task at hand, your brain is also filled with all kinds of beliefs. Oh, you know, what happens if I fail here? They're going to think that the stereotype is true. You might be thinking, well, how can I show them that the stereotype is wrong? How can I change my effort and strategies so that I can actually be effective here? And the problem is all of those thoughts take away from the ability for you to really focus and concentrate on the task at hand, and you often end up confirming the very stereotype that you're concerned about.
Okay, Dr. Steven Stressner, we're going to break, and I can't wait to ask you a couple more questions.
Okay,
because
very good.
I'm a rocky world. No, I'm kidding. Okay, we'll be right back.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Do you feel like sometimes you just don't know where to start with your health and fitness routine? Every week, you can hear from people who have been where you feel that you are right now and find out how they move forward and are living their best lives ever. It's called Lifestyle 360, and your host is Nicole Monier. Get inspired to take control of your health and your life. Tune into Lifestyle 360 every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Are you ready to move to your next level? Listen for Empowering Women, Transforming Lives with host Rebecca Hall Greider. Each show will focus on a central topic with discussion, guests, and your questions being featured. Our show is perfect for women who feel a call in their heart to step out in a bigger, more powerful way in their life and just need some encouragement, inspiration, and practical steps to support them on their journey. Empowering Women, Transforming Lives can be heard live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Empowerment.
Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, I'm back with Dr. Steven Stressner. And are you guilty of this? Do you look at somebody and automatically judge them because of the way they look, the clothes they wear, tattoos, or the cars they drive, whatever? But I think we all guilty of this. And I think my guests can really, you know, give a great perspective of it, because he's written so many articles and peer reviews, everything. So I welcome Dr. Stephen Estrosa again. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
So what we were discussing, like, how you said earlier in the conversation that we do have a bias of when we're born, like towards our mother's heartbeat, towards our voice and stuff like that. But do we further educate our kids in schools?
That's a good question. And, you know, that's obviously one opportunity that we can have to influence our kids' beliefs, is how they're socialized. And, of course, it starts before school. It starts from the very earliest time when they're developing a sense of how the world is structured and what social categories are out there. So we can have an influence on that. I think one thing that's important is to recognize that kids are going to think in terms of categories. And to some degree, we want them to. We want them to, for example, be able to stay away from strangers. That's something we teach our children. Don't trust strangers. We might teach them that certain people are in the world to help us, so that if you're lost, you should look for somebody who's in a police uniform. These are beliefs and teachings that we have about social categories. And so much of what we're doing with our kids are teaching them some of the basic social categories that matter, that we think that matter. And sometimes we teach them stereotypes because we think that having that knowledge will be helpful most of the time. So, for example, we might teach our kids, if you get lost, look around for an adult in a police uniform because that person will help you. Now, will police officers help children? Of course, the vast majority of the time that they will. Every once in a while might a child happen to come across a police officer who's not helpful or is cruel or maybe is intoxicated. Well, that might happen too, but we don't worry about that for the most part. We say, well, most of the time this is a good thing to teach our kids. This is a helpful piece of information that could be useful in a time when it's needed. But we're really teaching stereotypes at that point. What then ends up happening is we sort of create all sorts of or point out all sorts of social categories in the world, and then some of the things we teach our kids is done quite unintentionally. So, for example, they might see sitcoms, and they see men and women doing very different things, and it's not commented upon why that is the case, so they develop gender stereotypes. They go to school, they see that the nurse is generally a woman, and that the PE teachers are men, or that the principals are men, but that the home economics teachers are women. And so they're learning about their social world, and they're developing beliefs, and sometimes we want them not to embrace those beliefs so firmly. So what do you do about that? Well, one thing you can do is, you know, have interesting discussions with your kids about these beliefs that are developing. When you see them saying things that endorse gender stereotypes, or say when your kids say things like, well, you can't be a doctor, you're a woman, well, then you might want to expose your kids to some women who are doctors so that they can see that these stereotypes, even though they might generally be true and accurate, might need to be modified in light of, you know, other experience that we've exposed them to.
So what you're thinking about, you're talking about social media, what do you think when people put up this false perception and prey on other people, like whether, you know, it was like for revenge or whatever, but I mean, they put up this social profile to lure people in. I mean, everybody's vulnerable because, you know, if you're a widow or they see that on, you know, Facebook, then they know how to, you know, play you and stuff like that. So they use the stereotypical roles. And, well, I guess a lot of criminals do that too, right?
Sure. Once you start looking for it, it's really all over the place. And it's hard to not be affected by that. You know, we're always sort of updating what we believe to be true about various groups. That's going to be influenced by what we're exposed to. You know, if you want to maybe have a little more accuracy in our beliefs about groups, then you probably would want to pay attention to the sorts of media you're consuming. And you might want to not always, you know, watch the same kinds of films with the same kinds of stereotypical representations. And that sounds like you're trying to be politically correct, but I would say that it's not about political correctness. It's about accuracy. It's about developing beliefs that actually correspond to the reality of your experience. And so if you want to say that, you know, being accurate and having beliefs that actually recognize the actual diversity of people and the actual traits and characteristics that groups have, then, you know, call me politically correct. But if your underlying motive is for accuracy, then I would say that, you know, that's a good way to make sure that to the degree we're exposed to things in the culture, we're trying to counterbalance some of the things when we know we're negatively being affected in terms of our beliefs.
Well, Dr. Stephen, I mean, I need to ask your opinion, okay? You know, the other day was Columbus Day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then to remove, because it might, I'm still trying to put my hands up in the air, figure it out. I mean, people should be able to make that decision on their own, whether it was good or bad, that he was, you know, whatever. And, I mean, to wipe history, should people write, you know, like the slave, I mean, should we, you know, wipe history because it wasn't right? I mean, politically.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good example. It's getting a little bit far away from stereotypes, but it has to do with sort of perceptions and beliefs and history.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's a good case where, in fact, the mere fact that we're talking about controversy around Columbus Day shows that people are learning a little bit more accurate information about the consequences, both intended and unintended, of what occurred in that event. When I was growing up, when you were growing up, presumably, no one questioned Columbus Day. It was just, you know, it was a wonderful day that we didn't have to go to school in many places. Now there's a lot of debate about it, and I think that's good. People are learning about positive and negative aspects of what happened in that event. And, you know, we don't describe it the same way anymore. We don't say Columbus discovered America. We say Columbus was the first European to, you know, land on North American shores. And it turns out that's not even true either. But, you know, we're learning. And that's an interesting case where, as time has gone on, there has been an engagement with what really happened. And although it's not pleasant for everyone and there's a lot of contention over these issues, people are learning. And there's more accuracy in what people know to be true about that event. And it's a good parallel to many of the things that we're talking about.
Right, because, I mean, stereotypical. I mean, we say that that we landed here and we took advantage of the Indians. But guess what? If we didn't come here, then maybe what we are today would not exist. I mean, so I don't understand the negative of that,
yeah,
you know, concept. I mean, yeah, like you said, I mean, right, acknowledge it for what it is, and the good and the bad. And it just seems like people that do stereotyping is like they only want to focus on the negative.
Or they want to think that everyone in the group is the same. I mean, that's really a landmark part of stereotypes, is not just that we have beliefs about groups, but that we think that everyone in that group has those, you know, that belief applies to everyone in that group. So, you know, it's when we have these simplistic representations of groups, when we think that groups are extremely different, you know, members of different groups are very different from each other, and that they are all the same. Those are really the hallmarks of stereotypic thinking. And what education can do, and what exposure can do, and what learning can do is to maybe introduce some variability in our beliefs about groups. So rather than saying all the members of group X have trait Y, you might become a little bit more sophisticated and you say, okay, members of group X, some of them have trait Y, some of them have trait Y and Z, some of them don't have trait Y at all. That in fact there's some diversity there, even within the group. And that pushes against our mental tendency to try to simplify everything, to try to pigeonhole everybody so that we can think efficiently but inaccurately, and That's where education comes in. That's where experience comes in. That's where people raising sensitivities and having important discussions about the nature of groups and the history of groups and the experiences of groups can be helpful in sort of working against stereotypical thinking.
Well, it seems like there's also a fear factor that people are fearful of what they perceive, they don't know, what they might find out. And I think there's a divergency with the fear that, you know, that people think, well, you know, if I cross that line, you know, is it correct or?
I think you're absolutely right. And part of that is because there are so many sensitive issues around diversity. People are scared to say the wrong thing. They're scared if they say the wrong thing, they'll be rebuked or they'll be ostracized or attacked. You know, these are concerns that we have. And I think it's exacerbated by the fact that we don't even have a way of talking about our psychological processes. We often say things, I often encounter people saying things like, well, I don't even, you know, that sounds like an interesting research topic, psychology of stereotyping and prejudice, but, you know, I don't even think of people in terms of categories. I don't use categories when I think about people. I think what they're saying is I don't over-rely on them, and I don't think that the beliefs I have about categories are true of everyone or should be used instead of the information I'm actually getting from a person. But I think people don't appreciate the degree to which our thinking is fundamentally not about individuals as individuals, but individuals as members of groups. And until you have that awareness that that's sort of built in the way we go through the world, then it's hard to talk about that. And that's where I find, relating social cognition, thinking about people, to object cognition is helpful for talking to people about these issues. When I teach about this, I start with examples like the apple that we use later, that people put objects into categories, object categories, and then beliefs about and knowledge about those categories come up in our mind and they help us. And if you can relate social cognition, the way we think about people in groups, to object cognition, then we can start talking about how our minds work, what are the advantages of the way the mind works, and what are some of the disadvantages, what are some of the ways in which thinking that way gets us into trouble and leads us to make errors and leads us to behave in ways that we're not always proud of.
Well, you know, that what you just said reminds me of people that join gangs. You know, I mean, they get that mentality, but the psychology of it, they've got that family, that cohesiveness, that they are one in the mind, and that's one of the ones that I think of first, foremost, about when you just said gangs, like why, you know, people join gangs, because they want that identity and that, that psychological well-being.
Yeah,
feeling.
Now you're really bringing in some things that really speak to the tenacity of thinking in terms of groups. Not only are there these cognitive benefits that I've talked about quite a bit in terms of clarifying and simplifying, but then there are also these motivational benefits that, you know, when you're a member of a group and you identify as such, you get value from being seen as a group member. You say, yes, they are like me and I am like them. And this is often how, you know, many of us get meaning in our lives, is by having affiliations with social groups. So, for example, I identify as a college professor. I have beliefs about college professors. Mm-hmm. Most of those beliefs I have are good. There are, of course, a few negative beliefs, too. But I get value from identifying that way. People get value from identifying their roles as parents, for example, or as grandparents. Or they get value from identifying with their gender. So now you've really brought in another way that stereotypes are different from other kinds of beliefs, and that is that we get value from having them, and we often embrace these group labels because it makes us feel important, and it makes us feel connected to other people, and it extends the self beyond the self, where you can say, I am connected to this this broader thing, this bigger thing.
So you can actually see the people that, like, you know, sadly to say that they feel like they're the outcast, they don't fit in, and they commit suicide or because they don't have that. What does that? I mean, I'm wondering, psychology, why don't they have that connection?
Yeah, you know, I think to get down to the individual case level, it's tough to say that, well, people who don't form these bonds, who don't form these identities, it's hard to say that there's one reason why that happens. It could also be that the identification is with a group that does not give them value. You know, sometimes our systems are set up to make people think very poorly of themselves. So, for example, we have an entire, correction system that sort of labels people as an ex-con or a criminal.
And it makes it
very, very difficult for a person then in the real world to sort of survive without that label chasing them around. And I think there are all sorts of consequences, mostly negative, to a system that basically labels you as, you know, a convict, a criminal, and makes it very, very difficult for you to think of yourself in any other terms than those that are imposed by that system.
Well, it seems like it's almost impossible. We're going to go to break in about 2 minutes, but I wanted to ask you, it seems almost impossible to not be labeled in some kind of context.
Yes, that's true. And so, you know, for people who have a choice, like I'm going to emphasize this identity or I'm going to emphasize that identity, that's great. But sometimes those identities are not things that we have much choice over. So, for example, we were just talking about people who are convicted of crimes and go to prison. Uh-huh. Well, that label's going to stick with them. Their choice, there might have been some choice involved in the conduct that got them into prison, but once you're there, you don't have any control over that. There are other categories like racial categories that we also don't have much control over either. You know, people are going to, based on what we look like, put us into membership and social categories, and we don't have much control over that. What we do have control over is sort of how we represent our group to the broader world. We have choices. Do I want to emphasize that I'm like other members of my group, or maybe I want to at times make it very clear that I'm different from other members of my group? Sometimes there are benefits to being seen similarly to others. Like I said, I'm a college professor. I generally benefit from the assumption that college professors are reasonably intelligent people. Am I always intelligent? Absolutely not. I do benefit from that assumption. I benefit from that stereotype. At the same time, I might, in certain contexts, go out of my way to sort of challenge that stereotype, or at least the applicability of that stereotype to me. So I might be a little funnier than you would expect college professors to be, or I might go out and dance and show that college professors aren't all stuffy. So there are ways in which we can selectively either endorse or challenge beliefs that might apply to ourselves.
Okay, well, thank you so much. We're getting ready to go to break right now. I have the wonderful Dr. Stephen Stressner, who's giving such keen insight. We'll be right back.
Success starts here. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. It's your world.
Like so many others, do you put on a game face to the world? The stress of home life, work life, and personal life converge on us on practically a daily basis. Yet, so rarely do we let others see our real selves, and we carry on like we don't have a single problem. We need to connect and to find out we're not alone. Tune into Stories from the Heart of Leadership with host Shamin Sadek to find out not only what's been created, but the story behind it. Listen live every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Master your reality and manifest your desires effortlessly. Listen to The Trivedi Effect to find out how raising your level of consciousness can totally transform every aspect of your life. Hosted by Mahendra Kumar Trivedi with Trivedi Master Alice Branton, our program will spotlight the nearly 4,000 documented scientific studies that have proven the transformational impact of this energy extends beyond humans to all living and even non-living matter.
Tune in Mondays at 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Empowerment Channel, or Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Become a member of VoiceAmerica.com. It's easy and best of all, it's free. Start out by going to our homepage or any of our channels and click register at the top. Once you've created an account and signed in, you can create your own custom library, opt into our newsletter, search by show, host, guest, or topic of interest, or browse millions of hours of content across all of our Voice America radio channels. Membership gets you more. Visit VoiceAmerica.com today to get started and tailor the listening experience to your taste.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, everybody. I'm back with Dr. Steven Starsner. And, my goodness, he's going to give us an insight on his latest research, which stereotyping, threatening. Please, Stephen, Dr. Stephen.
Yeah, sure.
Help me. I'm sorry.
No, I'm happy to talk about some of the latest research.
Okay.
We've been doing some research in my lab. I'm a faculty member at Barnard College at Columbia University, and we've been doing some research on my lab looking at the conditions under which people actually seem to embrace stereotyping. There appear to be some conditions where people say, I'm going to let myself believe something that normally I wouldn't believe because I think it's going to help me. And one condition that we think people do this is when they have a sense of imminent threat. And that stereotypes, particularly stereotypes related to threat and danger, are stereotypes that we sometimes use when we think we need to use them in order to maintain safety and security.
So you'd say that would be something like you held captive, which it becomes, what is that, you know, when you're held captive and you psychologically, you know, give yourself over to that person.
Yeah, I mean, the conditions that we've been studying are, you know, sort of everyday situations that you might encounter. You might read about a criminal case or something, or the examples that my students really resonate with are, you know, involve like getting on the New York City subway. We're located in New York. That's a pretty common experience. And I ask my students, you know, if it's 2 p.m. and you get on the subway, you know, do you pay a lot of attention to the people around you? And most of my students say, no, not really. And I say, you know, if let's say that there's a lot of ethnic minorities on the subway. Are you going to notice that? Is that going to affect your behavior? And they say, of course not. I'm not that kind of a person. But if we just change one aspect of that situation and that it happens at 2 a.m. rather than 2 p.m, then my students say, well, I pay a lot of attention then to that because, you know, I've got to, like, take a look for threats in the environment. I got to make sure that I'm safe. And, you know, stereotypes might be inaccurate, but, you know, I'm gonna lean on them a little bit in that situation. And so I might be affected by the race of the other occupants of the subway car, or certainly the gender of the occupants in the subway car. And I might let myself believe things that I normally would resist. And so our concern with being a fair, egalitarian person, we might let go of that a little bit in situations if we think that, you know, believing in a stereotype might protect us a little bit. So I think this phenomenon, I characterize this as, you know, why people are a little more prejudiced after midnight. And it really just has to do with any context where we feel that our personal safety and security is at risk, then we start paying attention to social group memberships that suggest to us, stereotypically, that somebody might be a threat or a danger.
But, you know, and then you have to wonder because, okay, let's say the other person, they perceiving as a threat. You, that person, thinking, you're looking like they perceiving you as a victim.
Yes. There's all sorts of, you know, I think processes that go on in these situations involving threat to personal safety that make it a context in which people are going to think stereotypically, that they're going to say, you know, normally I think these things are inaccurate. Normally if I use stereotypes, I would feel badly about myself. But in those situations, I think people are more likely to say, you know, if it keeps me safe, I don't mind being a little bit prejudiced. I don't mind being a little bit biased, because I'd rather be a little prejudiced than at risk for harm.
Right. You have a picture of, you know, I'm not going to get racial or whatever, but it could be flip-flop, whatever. You got this beautiful buxom woman on, and you have this kind of like a gangster guy, and she might be the one that's going to be the attacker. I mean,
that's absolutely right. Or these are all based on stereotypes, and our stereotypes, as we know, are wrong much of the time. And we even recognize that. But you know, when your sense of imminent safety is really being threatened, your sense of safety is being threatened, then those are times you say, you know what, the stereotype's probably wrong here too, but I'd rather believe in the stereotype here and be careful and err on the side of caution, rather than, you know, being a fair, egalitarian person and then maybe putting myself at risk. And so I think, you know, what we're finding in our studies is that people sort of relax their normal motivation to be a fair person. And they say, you know what, I'll be a little bit unfair here because I think doing so allows me to have a sense of safety and security, even though we know that, you know, those stereotypes are probably not accurate. They don't apply to the person involved, but we'd rather be a little bit biased and sort of say, well, you know, I'm probably going to make the mistake of believing in a stereotype that's not true, but I guess I'd rather make that error than to not believe in a stereotype that I should have.
Well, you just answered my question I was going to ask you. I mean, because the woman, whoever, immediately had that bias and that but that had to be ingrained somewhere.
Well, you know, the stereotypes tell us what we need to know in any given situation. So, you know, if you need, you know, you're starting you want to do a website. So then you say, okay, well, what sort of people are creative? And you're going to say, well, let me go find one of those people. If you say, well, I'm concerned about safety and security, well, what are the sort of people that would make me feel safe? What are the sort of people that I should avoid? These are all answered by the beliefs we have about various social groups. And so, you know, I'm talking about it in the domain of safety and security, but it's very, very broad. Whenever we think about meeting some particular goal or filling some particular motive, you know, we think about, well, how would I go about doing that? And that's where we rely on our stereotypes in order to guide our behavior, guide our judgments, help determine what we're going to do next. Even though we know our stereotypes are often faulty, and they are, they most certainly are, and of course they can have terrible negative consequences for the person being stereotyped, ranging from not being considered for a job to, unfortunately, we hear regular incidents of people being shot or killed because of racial stereotypes.
Like, I mean, it's all over the news. For
it always is, unfortunately. You know, I never run out of examples to begin lectures on the negative effects of stereotyping and prejudice, unfortunately.
I mean, and it's getting to be more more predominant, you know, it seems, which... I have to have you back to be able to say, how do we, you know, broach this problem? I mean, to, you know, starting in kindergarten or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
In the womb, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you know, have so much more input because you have so much research on the difference on promotion, prevention.
Uh-huh. Well, the nice thing is it's, you know, it's not just me who does this research. It's been a burgeoning area of research interest for the last several decades, and we've learned a tremendous amount about how stereotypes form, when they change, how they change, how we self-regulate our use of stereotypes so that we can maybe be more effective in avoiding stereotyping when we don't want to be. So it's been a very exciting area to do research, and I do think that there are a lot of real-world implications here that could, you know, that flow from some of the research findings that have come out of social psychology in the last few decades.
Oh, I only have 30 seconds, but I want everybody to know how they can reach you and all the pertinent information.
Sure. I'm a member of the Department of Psychology at Barnard College at Columbia University. And if you go to the website for Barnard, you can certainly find me at the psychology department, and you can have contact information there. And it would be, I'd love to hear from all of your listeners, their comments or their feedback or their questions that they'd like to pose.
Oh, I am so happy to have you as a guest. I can't tell you. You were just so inspiring. And, I mean, you know, laid it on the line. I mean, a lot of people don't guess, like, you know, they scared a tiptoe. But, I mean, you said like it is, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. It was really a pleasure to speak with you, and I loved that we were able to really touch on so many diverse topics.
Thank you, and I have my guest again as Dr. Steven Stressner. Thank you.
You are welcome.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro, will be back again next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis. We hope you'll join us as well.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.